From KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters.
Evolution didn't design us to be happy. Evolution designed us in the sense to be discontented, always wanting more status, more reproductive opportunities, more wealth, more. Organisms on the African savanna who sat around counting their blessings, they weren't the ones who passed on their genes. So we shouldn't be surprised that humans so much of the time are unhappy and discontented. It's been genetically adapted. I was a melancholy, introspective child, and a lonely, introspective teenager. I used to rock to pop music each day in the dark, thinking about the nature of life, reality, thought, suffering, and so forth. At some bookstore, I picked up an introduction to neuroscience. It was just some popular, pop science book. And I stumbled across this notion of wireheading. Wireheading is when an electrode is placed in a particular region of your brain, and by pressing a lever, it's possible for the pleasure centers of the brain to be stimulated. If an animal had electrodes implanted, the animal in question would compulsively press the lever to get the reward, the enjoyable stimulus. Wireheading was more enjoyable than food or sex or anything else. And unlike other pleasures, it didn't seem to show any tolerance. Here was a way that you could get rid of all forms of suffering if one were to have an implant like this. This was tremendously exciting to me. Now, most people find the idea of wireheading distasteful. The only people who don't tend to be severely depressed. But nonetheless, it was just a clue that it's possible to have pleasure indefinitely without the kind of the negative feedback mechanisms of the hedonic treadmill. I mean, I spent a lot of time thinking about drugs and designer drugs because I was, hoping that it was going to be possible to discover some kind of drug that would, in a sense, re-engineer my reward circuitry so that I could enjoy life.
David Pierce is a philosopher. His area of focus is hedonism, or the belief that a good life comes from pursuing happiness and pleasure and avoiding pain and suffering. He told me about this concept in psychology known as hedonic adaptation. It says that basically most people have a set level of happiness, or a hedonic set point. And even after big successes or crushing disappointments, people eventually tend to settle back to whatever level of happiness they've always been. They return to their hedonic set point. David says that hedonic adaptation wouldn't be a problem if there weren't so many people whose default isn't happiness. He should know. David says he's been a depressive person all his life, prone to melancholy. He says he's never experienced anything above an emotionally neutral state, what he calls hedonic zero. Not without the help of mind-altering substances, anyway. But David thinks it doesn't have to be like this.
A world without pain and suffering is possible. A world without any form of experience below hedonic zero is possible. It is possible to re-engineer our reward circuitry so that ordinary life, everyday life, its default setting, is far richer than anything physiologically possible today.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
what kind of future children, future civilization we want to have.
The podcast about the unknown.
Hello, my name is David Pearce. I'm a transhumanist. Back in 1995, I wrote an online manifesto called The Hedonistic Imperative, which essentially argues that we should use biotechnology to redesign our reward circuitry such that transhumans and future posthumans can enjoy life based on gradients of superhuman bliss that may be orders of magnitude richer than anything physiologically feasible today.
What is transhumanism?
Transhumanism is an extremely broad movement. I mean, one definition often given is that transhumanists believe in the use of technology to overcome our biological limitations. But one definition I sometimes use is transhumanists believe in the three supers. That's super intelligence, super longevity, and my particular focus, super happiness. Superintelligence is this idea that we're going to be able to massively augment our intellectual capacities, become transhuman and then posthuman. Super longevity is this idea that just as silicon robots can, in principle, be repaired and upgraded indefinitely, likewise, organic robots such as humans can, too, in principle, be upgraded and repaired, and ensure that everyone can enjoy indefinite, healthy, youthful lifespans. The third super, or super happiness, this is the idea that it's going to be possible to phase out the biology of suffering throughout the living world and replace it with gradients of intelligent well-being. I think the purely technical obstacles to getting rid of suffering are diminishing. But the political, social obstacles are immense.
David has been a figure in the transhumanist movement for decades. He co-founded a prominent transhumanist organization called Humanity Plus, and has been writing about what he calls the biohappiness revolution since the mid-1990s. He thinks that if we start now, we can ensure that future generations of humans and animals live blissful, pain-free lives. Some of his views are pretty radical, maybe even fringe. He thinks that we should abolish all kinds of suffering, even in the wild. And to do that, he thinks that we ought to genetically alter all predators to be vegan.
Even a cat, I see the cat through the eyes of a mouse. And it's not as though they're trying to cause suffering or be evil or anything like that. They simply do not understand the implications of what they're doing. And do we want a living world in which sentient beings harm each other or allow each other to come to harm? It sounds a bit grandiose, but... Sorry, I'm going to have to get a pastel. Sorry, excuse me.
Pastel.
Hi, I'm back again.
Hello. What is a pastel?
That's a throat lozenge, yes. If I talk too much, my voice can give way. I would love to have a deep, rich, booming basso profundo voice, but I don't.
So what is it that you are proposing? What are your proposals as they can be realized today?
Well, we're starting off with prospective parents. At the moment, every child born today is a unique, untested genetic experiment, and most parents are happy just to roll the genetic dice, see what happens. And sometimes the results are relatively fortunate, but many other times they're not. But increasingly, as the century unfolds, it's going to be possible to choose hedonic range, hedonic set points. How much, crudely, how much suffering your child is going to undergo in the course of a lifetime, given that people with a very high hedonic set point will tend to suffer much less than people with a low hedonic set point. Essentially, before implantation in the womb, it's possible to screen the actual genetic makeup of, let's say, multiple zygotes and see which alleles or allelic variations they have. And so something like SCN9A for pain sensitivity, a volume knob for pain, as well as physical pain, though, mental pain, and that one can't speak of a single gene that is the volume knob for mental pain. But nonetheless, we know particular genes and alleles associated with a high hedonic set point. And so essentially, if you're having a child, are you going to intervene to try to ensure that your kid has a high quality of life? The point is that one can no longer say it's the will of God or fate. Essentially, power brings complicity, whether we like it or not. And though personally I have grave reservations about the idea of creating any new life that may suffer, most people want to have kids, and I would anticipate that in future, responsible parents will maximize the likelihood that their offspring will be able to flourish. Which version would you like for your future child? Or do you think it's inappropriate for us to play God?
What is your response to someone who says it's inappropriate to play God?
Well, in some sense, I think that by creating life, you are playing God. Personally, as a negative utilitarian, soft antinatalist, I'm not convinced that one really is ethically entitled to bring more suffering into the world. But this is a minority position. Well, be a minority position for the indefinite future. So let's assume that it is ethically permissible to conduct these genetic experiments. If one is going to be doing genetic experimentation, let's try to do so responsibly. Many people, perhaps even most people, are comfortable or at least not opposed to using genome editing or pre-implantation genetic screening and counseling to prevent, you know, Tay-Sachs, Huntington's, cystic fibrosis, and so forth, you know, what are almost universally acknowledged to be disorders. They are much less comfortable, in many cases opposed to the idea of what would be perhaps seen as enhancement, mood enhancement, that depressive illness is absolutely horrible. It's at least as bad as something, a disorder like cystic fibrosis, and we ought to be aiming to eliminate low mood.
Where I still struggle with this is that were there, you know, radical sweeping social changes that sort of alleviated institutional suffering for people and for animals for that matter? I don't feel convinced that other forms of suffering are harmful enough to be edited out of our biology, out of humans' biology.
Essentially, as we are designed at the moment, all but the very luckiest humans are going to experience severe pain, severe distress sometime in their life. But above all, I don't always stress this enough, but it's a case of, should we retain involuntary suffering when it becomes technically optional? I mean, it's not a case of forcing anyone to give up the right to be sad or anything like that. And the question is one going to compel people to suffer when it becomes a matter of choice?
I mean, my reaction to what you just said is that in my experience, there has been value to pain that I've experienced. You know, as someone who currently lives with depression and is treated, you know, I go to therapy, I take antidepressants, I have my self-care tools that are important to my well-being. Do I wish I didn't have depression? Yes. Do I wish that I had never experienced heartbreak or homesickness or grief? No, not necessarily, because I think those things have led to growth. I feel more resilient than I did when I was a kid. I feel smarter.
I wouldn't disagree that suffering can sometimes be instructive. The question is it indispensable? Is it functionally, computationally indispensable? And would one want, if one has children or grandchildren, or if one doesn't, nieces and nephews, would one want them to experience involuntary pain and suffering? Personally, I don't know of any form of sort of cognitive ability that couldn't, in principle, be replicated without the nasty, raw feels of suffering. Mm.
Would bliss get old after a while? This is actually a thought I used to have as a kid before I basically outgrew the religious framework that I grew up in. I just thought heaven sounded boring.
Quite a lot of people have at least privately thought, well, an eternity in heaven praising God all day or just being, isn't that just a little bit dull? It's a very strong intuitive reaction a lot of people have. But, I mean, just, you know, consider the tragic cases of people who are chronically depressed or pain-ridden. Does the fact that they can't contrast their pain and depression with joyful experiences in some way mean that they, you know, they're not suffering? I mean, sadly, no. So, yes, one can have all the contrast one wants in future, but I hope it can be the contrast between the sublime and the merely wonderful. One can have gradients of exhilaration, gradients of fascination. This is one of the good things about actually re-engineering our reward circuitry, that essentially one can make dullness, boredom impossible. I mean, quite a lot of people would regard the meaning of life and happiness as quite separate issues, but other things being equal, the happier one becomes, the more meaningful and significant life seems. And conversely, as sadly I fear you probably know, that when one is feeling low or depressed, life can be drained of all meaning. But yeah, the biohappiness revolution that I anticipate could also be called a meaning revolution too.
Do you find it therapeutic to sort of imagine this future where suffering doesn't exist?
Yeah, although I talk and write about it, I still find it very, very hard really to imagine. I mean, I can use the words, I can talk about superhuman bliss, sublime well-being and so forth, but I only just get the hint of what it could be like. But yeah, I mean, getting there, it's such a daunting challenge, not just the technical, but the socio-political obstacles. Yeah, at times my life force flickers. But in a sense, I think it's where we're going, and I think cautiously, tentatively, it is going to happen.
Well, what else is on your docket today? I guess it's approaching evening time for you by now.
Probably just some mindless video gaming. And it would be lovely if I would...
Oh, what are you playing?
Modern Combat Versus. It's a first-person shooter. It's a very male game because it involves conflict and violence. Not all of my ancestors hid in their burrows. Perhaps I've got Viking blood. Thank you.
If you want to challenge David to a game of Modern Combat Versus, his username is Vegan Pacifist, and he's a member of the Herbivores Clan. To read more about David and his work, visit our website, hbmpodcast.com. I'm Bethany Denton. I produced this episode with editing help from Jeff Emptman. Music by Circling Lights, The Black Spot, and Flower Petal Downpour. Here Be Monsters is distributed by KCRW. Our senior editor there is Kristen Lepore. We get additional support for freelance contributions from KCRW's Independent Producer Project. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon.
Il dort à la surface.